Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
I don't think that'll ever get old. That's great. Good one. MOTAT. Now, yes, rogue molecule. Am I using this correctly?
Because
you did indicate that it was a molecule doing something it isn't supposed to do isn't designed to do.
Well, it wasn't designed to do. So this is a nice little story, I guess, of how nature works, I suppose. And nature is astonishing. I think that's a fair comment. And nature is all full of molecules, chemicals, call them what you will. And in this case, what we're looking at is a fungus in Alaska.
Okay.
And it puts out molecules that can get rid of the smell of skunks.
What?
Well, precisely that. So the story starts with a citizen science project. So this is one of those things where members of the public or whatever go out and do something sort of sciencey. So they might be, you know, doing surveys of things, or they might be sort of collecting samples of things. And in this case, it was the latter. So it was a science project, and folk were encouraged to send soil samples to these researchers in Oklahoma, of all places. And so these workers in Oklahoma were busy sort of looking at the soil samples and seeing what sort of molecules were in there, because humankind is always on the lookout for new molecules that can do stuff, basically. Most often, we're looking for new medicines. And
right,
what you find is that a large number of drugs and stuff like that have their origins in natural products. So they come from nature. So they're made, you know, generally by plants, in this case by fungi or whatever.
I was actually listening to an interesting podcast about this. It was called Finite, and it was the idea that, like, obviously we're getting more and more immune to certain antibiotics, I suppose.
Yes, indeed.
And that sort
yep.
of thing.
Yes.
So having to find new things.
Yes, 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 yes.
This is what we're talking about.
And that's because people don't take their antibiotics
properly
to the end. Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. And then you get bugs that build up immunity to them, and then you're screwed. So that's why you have your super bugs and things like that.
And why people test soil.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, and yeah, why people spend a hell of a lot of time sieving through a hell of a lot of things looking basically for that sort of magic bullet. And so this is, you know, this is what they were doing. And so they found one molecule. They isolated one molecule from this Alaskan soil that sort of looked a little bit weird, you know. So these folk are chemists. They know how molecules should look, and they have a fair idea just from the look of a molecule, from its chemical makeup, what it's going to do. And they found one molecule which they thought, oh, that's a bit weird. That looks very, very highly, highly reactive. You know, let's maybe see what that does. And this was actually part of a larger molecule. So they sort of cleaved off this part of the larger molecule and played around with it. And this particular bit of the molecule was known to be quite reactive towards toxins and stuff like that. It did have reactivity towards sort of nasties. So they thought, what else could we possibly use this for? And then somebody had the really bright idea of, oh, shit, maybe we could get this to knock out skunk smells.
How do they? I just want to know where they do they just write these ideas down? Like, should we try for this? Should we try for this? Or should we try?
Yeah. They had a brainstorming session, apparently. And they were sort of saying, okay, so basically, we know that this molecule is probably going to oxidize things. There's a chemical reaction called oxidation. They say, oh, you know, this is probably going to oxidize things. What could we do with that? And skunk odor, and which I've never smelled, actually.
Neither.
No,
neither.
I've been to the States a few times, but never, luckily, managed to run over literally a skunk. And so skunk odor is made of molecules that contain sulfur atoms.
Okay.
So, for example, like when you smell your natural gas, okay, so if you've got sort of pipe gas or something like that, or you've got gas in a canister or whatever, the smell that you smell is not gas. It's a molecule that contains sulfur because it's really, really stinky. And so that alerts you to the fact that you've got a gas leak.
Wow. Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay. So similar molecules are involved in making skunks stink the way that they do. And one way of getting rid of them is to oxidize the molecule. Okay. So if you can find something that will oxidize the molecule, then great. Now, you could use something like bleach, or you could use hydrogen peroxide, but they're nasty. So you don't really want to be sort of, you know, covering yourself in those sorts of things. And so they found this new molecule, and as I said, they thought, you know, let's see if it works against skunk, and it did. And it oxidized those sulfur-containing molecules, and it made them not smelly.
So the smell just disappears. The smell is not there.
No, it does mean the smell is not there.
Because, it's just gone.
Because you're changing the molecule. Okay,
what?
You're actually altering the structure of the molecule. So you're carrying out this chemical oxidation of the molecule. And so that converts it to something that doesn't smell at all. And
right.
To give you some idea of skunky smells, you can smell, apparently, the skunk smell at 10 parts per billion. So that's 10 parts per 1,000 million, okay? So
wow.
This stuff is pretty all-pervasive. Yeah.
And, whoa.
So this is a and so what they then did, after they found that this, you know, sort of worked, they then took these commercial, supposedly, anti-skunk products that supposedly work, and they trialed their new stuff against these guys. They had six of them. Five of them didn't do a damn thing. The sixth one contained some nasty bloody oxidizing agent anyway that would, you know, you wouldn't want to put on yourself anyway. And this stuff they tested, they found that it's better than the stuff that's on the market at the moment. And they also found that there's no skin irritation, no eye irritation, no anything like that. So for some reason, and there has to be a reason, for some reason this fungus in Alaska is pumping out this particular molecule. And generally what you find is that, no, it's going to be something for defense. Okay, so
right.
So plants often make particular molecules for defense to keep predators off them, et cetera, et cetera. And so fungi is, and you know, as well do the same sort of thing. So
it
really is. It's just amazing. So there's obviously some predator of this fungus that is susceptible to this particular molecule. And,
wow,
you know,
cool.
Nature's just extraordinary.
Just amazing.
It really is. It's really
I'm
cool.
interested in, do they keep brainstorming now? Do they keep going, oh, let's try for this and this? Because I didn't realize there was such a big market for getting rid of skunk smells.
Well, it probably worked for any sort of smells, really,
okay.
as long as they're sort of sulfury based smells. So yeah. But you know, apparently it's a real problem. That, you know, the family dog always apparently gets in second best with skunks and comes back stinking like anything. So yeah.
Okay. All right, let's move on to this next story, and we can maybe spend a little bit less time on this one, just because we have covered it.
We have, yes.
But
yes.
So we're talking about cancer rulings and in particular the Monsanto Bayer.
Right.
Being basically there was the ruling that they had to pay because they caused somebody's cancer, essentially.
Yep. That was the ruling, yes.
And this ruling is still standing, mm-hmm. but they've decided that they've changed the amount they
right.
have to pay.
Yep. Yep, exactly. Plaintiff.
So I was going to say defendant, but not the plaintiff. Okay.
Yeah.
So the person seeking compensation.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. So basically, we have talked about this a couple of times, I think. And the most recent one was an award of $2 billion to a couple whose cancer was supposedly caused by Roundup or glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup. And so there's been three cases so far, and the amounts awarded by the juries have been $2 billion, $80 million, and $289 million. And so they have been reviewed by judges, they have been reduced. So the $2 billion is down to $87 million, the $80 million is down to $25 million, the $289 million is down to $78
million. Okay. These are fairly significant reductions.
They are significant reductions, but it's still a hell of a lot of money.
Yes.
Okay, so we're talking tens of millions of dollars here. And most importantly, the judge's finding in the most recent one, where he went from $2 billion down to $87 million, was that there was still sufficient evidence to say that the glyphosate had been a significant contributor to the cancers, a substantial factor in their cancers was the wording. And he also said that Monsanto had, quote, information not available to the scientific and medical community, and that it sought to impede, discourage, or distort scientific inquiry and the resulting science. Okay. Now, the reason they dropped the amounts was apparently the punitive damages were unconstitutional under US law, so they couldn't be that much, so they dropped them down. But my problem with this is the blame still stands, okay?
So, yeah, what's going to be done about that? Is that what you mean?
So, yeah, so Monsanto, which are now Bayer, because Bayer bought them last year,
mm-hmm.
They are going to be appealing these rulings. And in their defense, they say the US Environmental Protection Agency, the European Food Safety Authority, the European Chemicals Agency, and Health Canada all of an agreement saying that glyphosate is not carcinogenic when used as directed. Okay, so you don't go bathing yourself in it. Of course it's nasty. It kills plants, for God's sake.
Okay, so they're all saying that there's more to it.
They're all saying that if you use it as directed, it poses no danger. Okay, so you don't spray it all over yourself or whatever. You wear protective clothing. Mm. You wear a mask when you're applying it.
Right.
Okay, and my understanding is that these guys in the cases may well not have. Okay, but my point here and the point that I made the last two times we've discussed this is a courtroom is not the place for science to be argued. It absolutely isn't, okay? Because you can get, sadly, expert witnesses for either side of a scientific argument. And shit, you could get somebody, a supposed expert witness who could say that the Earth is flat because there's a Flat Earth Society out there, you know? Yeah. Get the head of that. They are an expert witness. And
this is what we're going to talk about later in the show.
Yeah, you know, yes, indeed. With Joel. Yes, yes.
So okay, with this particular decision, I still don't understand. Then it comes down to a constitutional decision. They've said actually this doesn't work as part of our constitution, so you just have to change it. You're still wrong.
Yes, exactly.
And you still have to pay.
Yes, yep.
You just pay less.
Yes.
So, I mean, I don't think that either amount necessarily going to bankrupt Bayer.
No, but there are 18,000 pending cases.
Oh.
18,000.
Holy shit.
Yes, holy shit indeed. Okay. So why the hell Bayer bought Monsanto knowing that this was in the works, I can't understand for the life of me.
And each one that they look, I mean, the precedent has been set, though. It's more than likely they will continue to lose.
We're talking tens of millions of
dollars. If they manage to win one, then every other one will be appealable, which they are all appealing anyway. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Okay. This is. So I see what you're saying.
Yeah. The lawyers are going to win.
This is true. And actually, if that's 18,000 cases, this is 18,000 people who now have cancer.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Which they are blaming on glyphosate.
On the particular chemical. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to the last story. Now, this is a paper written by yourself.
Myself and my partner, Rebecca.
Oh, you guys did a... That's really cute. Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So, this is a bit of shameless self-promotion.
Okay.
And but I thought, why not?
Well,
bugger it.
It's you, Alan. Come on.
So, some listeners may know that I sort of moonlight at another radio station doing podcast and all about the elements because
that's
it's the 150th anniversary of the periodic table this year. And as a result of that, I thought, what the hell, let's maybe write a paper on this. And because I've basically been studying all the elements in depth for most of the year, you sort of find that some of them have really good stories and some of them are a little bit less compelling stories, shall we say?
Yeah.
And is there such a thing as the most boring element?
Mm-hmm. Now, this is... I do have a... I'm just going to say, I don't like the word boring. No. I used to say, I'm bored as a kid, and my mum would be like, well, like, there's an endless amount of things that you can do. Just be imaginative. And so now...
She's right.
Yeah, exactly. And so I have this kind of issue with the word boring. You know, she'd be like, go do the dishes then.
Yeah, she had you there, didn't she? Yeah,
that's right.
Okay, so, well, we asked, you know, is there such a thing as the most boring element then in that case? And so what we did was to search the chemical literature. And now you may or may not know this, but the largest index in the world is the index of all of the chemical compounds.
You've talked about this too, yes.
Yeah. And it's a thing called chemical abstracts, or SciFinder, or CAS, or it's known under a variety of names, but it is the world's largest index of anything.
Wow.
And so we went through that, and you can electronically search this, and basically we searched for all of the 118 elements, and we found how many papers each element was mentioned in.
Oh.
Really? Okay. And so we worked off that for starters. So the most popular element is carbon. So that's in about 3 million papers.
Holy.
And the least popular element is francium, which is only in around about 2,000 odd
papers. I don't even
papers.
Think
okay?
I've heard the name.
Yeah, well, there you go. And so we did that for all 118 elements and went through, tabulated the numbers, and then thought, okay, what makes something interesting? What makes something boring? What makes an element interesting? What makes an element boring? And so we were sort of saying, well, you'd imagine that the interesting ones would be the ones that have got the most number of hits, the most number of references. But then you think, well, hang on, isn't it interesting that some of them got very, very few references? Doesn't that make it interesting in itself that they're so little studied? Why are they so little studied? That's got to be interesting. And so immediately we sort of thought, oh, hang on, we can't do it this way. We can't do it on pure numbers. So basically we went and did a review of all of the chemical elements, wrote down all of the stuff that they're known for being interesting for, you know, all of their good points. And then we came to a short list of six elements. God, and if I can remember those six elements, it's right here in front of me. So we have got strontium, hafnium, praseodymium, scandium, thulium, and protactinium.
Great.
All of which you've heard of.
Totally.
And then we went through all of those. And
were these the most interesting, you're saying?
No, these are the least. The least. These were the ones that didn't have really good stories and stuff about them. And so we got down to that short list and then we thought, right, let's go through this and look at them in a little bit more detail. And really, long story short, you're going to have to read the paper to find out which one we said was the most boring.
Right. I see what you've done there. Gotcha.
So this is just published in Nature Chemistry. And
this is a big deal, though.
Yeah, this is a really big deal. So that's why we're really happy about
publication in Nature.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yeah. So
congratulations.
We're very, very happy about it. Thank you very much.
It sounds like that's a lot of work. Just
it's a decent way to
work. You went through
the
massive FIST index in the world just, you know, for fun.
That's all we scientists do. But if you do want to read it, if you Google the most boring chemical element, I think it comes out on.
But it's one of those six, right? That's what you're saying?
Well, is it?
Ah.
Is it? See, I'm gonna leave you in suspense.
Somebody's texted in saying boron ?
No.
Oh. Okay.
No, boron's interesting. Boron is a constituent of the world's strongest acid, which is made by a New Zealander.
Oh, wow.
Ta-da! There you go. Interesting fact about boron.
Interesting fact. But also, this is the thing, how do we define boron?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, I'm still not sold on that. Somebody else just texted in saying, hi, g'day there. I've been using Roundup, i.e. glyphosate, for over 23 years and have had no problems.
Yes.
Bracket, I'm a landscape gardener. Use it almost daily as long as you're safe with it. Protective gear.
Yep.
Don't lick it or drink it. Yep. Haha. Follow instructions.
And
thanks, Mud.
I really couldn't agree more. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you, Ellen. I'm going to leave it there. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
We shall do. Thanks, Lillian.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.